The following is an excerpt from the Science Magazine podcast. To hear the whole show, visit www.sciencemag.org and click on Science Podcast.
David Grimm, Science's online news editor, is here with a wrap-up of some of the latest science news, including a story about why diets fail. People start eating again, Dave?
They do, Rob. And the reason it might turn out to be has to do with stress. This study is all about yo-yo dieting. This is the dieting where you try to diet, you lose some weight, then you start eating again, you gain the weight back, you try to diet again, you lose some weight, and then you keep on eating. This constant cycle that some people call yo-yo dieting turns out may have to do something with stress, at least in mice. The researchers took a bunch of mice and they reduced their food intake by about 25% over 3 weeks. And that's equivalent to sort of a moderate diet for us. And the rodents lost about 10 to 15% of their body weight. So they actually lost quite a bit of weight. But then what the researchers noticed is these rodents that had lost weight seemed more sensitive to stressful situations like loud noises than other mice. They also had higher levels of cortisol in their blood. Now, cortisol is this hormone that essentially pumps extra sugar into the blood to give us extra energy. And it's something we release when we get stressed out. Probably from an evolutionary standpoint, if, say, a bear was chasing you, you would pump a lot of cortisol in your blood. That would increase your blood sugar, and you could use that sugar for energy to run away. But that could also have bad consequences. As you can imagine, if you're stressed out a lot, you've got a lot of sugar in your blood, this sugar can actually increase your appetite, and then you start eating more, and then you're dieting to try to take that weight off, and that dieting makes you stressed out, and you're releasing more cortisol in your blood. It seems like a bit of a vicious cycle, kind of like what researchers see with yo-yo dieting. And that's what they saw in the mice. These mice that had dieted were more stressed out. They had more cortisol in their blood. They even had changes to their genetics. Their gene expression levels changed, where their gene expression had altered in such a way that they had higher levels of cortisol, higher levels also of other appetite-stimulating hormones. All this would be bad news for a human who wanted to diet, because having all these hormones in your blood is only going to make you hungrier, which is going to make you want to eat more.
So the conclusion that one can draw is not to diet or to do something else if you want to lose weight.
Well, one possible conclusion is to try not to be stressed out when you're dieting, which is probably a lot easier said than done. A more concrete suggestion is to try to develop medications that could actually target our stress response. So say you're trying to diet and you're having a really hard time. Researchers might be able to give you a drug that would decrease your stress levels. And then when you're dieting, you may not be as stressed out. You may not be pumping all these hormones into your blood, and you may have an easier time keeping the weight off.
Okay. Well, thanks, Dave. So what other stories have we brought with you this week?
Well, Rob, from taking the weight off to putting the water on, this next story is about where all the water came from to fill Earth's oceans.
What's the prevailing theory?
Well, the prevailing theory is that the water actually came, believe it or not, from outer space. About 3.9 billion years ago, when Earth was only about 600 million years old, it experienced a period of what astronomers call heavy bombardment. Basically, all these big icy comets and asteroids were smashing into the Earth. And because there was so much ice in these asteroids, that basically supplied Earth with all of its water.
And now, what's the new research?
Well, the new research argues that Earth didn't have to get its water from outer space. It supplied its own. And the idea behind this is that even at a very young age, Earth actually harbored quite a bit of water. And this is actually something that most researchers agree on. This wasn't a lot of water. It was about 10 to hundreds of parts per million. But this was water that was trapped in all of the rocks that made up early Earth. But the reason why astronomers started to look to outer space for explanations is they thought this wasn't nearly enough water to fill the oceans. Or even if it was, there was no real feasible way for all this water to get out of the rocks to make up Earth's oceans. But in this new study, a researcher argues that it actually was. What she did was she looked at a bunch of meteorites. Now, there's tons of meteorites all over Earth in museums and collections and whatever. And the reason she looked at the meteorites is these meteorites provide a really nice analog for what the rocks that formed early Earth looked like. And she did a lot of chemical analysis. She did some computer modeling. And what she found is when the Earth was really young and still very hot, it was so hot that it actually evaporated the water out of these rocks. The water rose as steam, created a bunch of steam in the atmosphere, and this steam rained down on the planet and formed the oceans. Now, this wasn't a very quick process. It actually probably happened over tens of millions of years, but according to her model, over that time period, that there would have been enough water inherently in Earth to create its own oceans.
Does this preclude the other theory that the meteorites and comets falling to Earth didn't contribute water?
Well, it's a little bit complicated. On the one hand, you could argue that these comets and asteroids smashing to Earth supplied even more water. But one researcher says that actually these comets and asteroids smashing to Earth would have created even more heat and would have boiled off any water that was there in the first place. So this expert actually says, you know, even if Earth did have these early oceans from its own water, this heavy bombardment would have boiled off all this water. But the researcher says she doesn't think that's likely, and at the most, it would have only boiled off about half of the water in the oceans. What's also interesting about this study, Rob, is that this doesn't just apply to Earth. It actually also applies to extrasolar planets. Astronomers are starting to find rocky worlds out there that aren't exactly like Earth, but resemble Earth in some ways. And if Earth, which started out as a very barren, rocky world, could produce its own oceans without having to rely on impacts from outer space, maybe these extrasolar planets could as well. And if these extrasolar planets have their own water, they could have life too.
Okay. So last story. What's this last one about?
Well, Rob, from waves of asteroids and comets hitting Earth to herald waves that might predict future disease epidemics.
What are herald waves?
Herald waves, as you might imagine from the terminology, herald the oncoming of an epidemic. This study deals specifically with cholera epidemic, and it's specifically the cholera epidemic that was devastating for London in the 1800s. There were several periods during this century when cholera struck, killing tens of thousands of people. But what researchers have found, they went back and they analyzed some of the data from these mass epidemics, and they found that with three of the biggest cholera epidemics to strike London, a few months before that, there were these smaller outbreaks of cholera that only killed a few hundred people and then seemed to have disappeared. And the researchers wondered, were these smaller outbreaks maybe the harbinger of these mass epidemics to come?
Sort of like a prequel.
Exactly. And that's exactly what they found. They found that there was a very tight correlation between when these early small-scale outbreaks would happen and these much larger outbreaks.
What would cause these prequels to happen and then die out and not become a full-fledged epidemic in the first place?
Well, what the researchers think was happening was that these prequels were caused by a new strain of cholera bacteria entering the population, a strain that the population didn't have immunity to. But cholera, the worst cholera epidemics in London happened in the summer. That's when there was a lot of heat, and that makes it very easy for microbes to spread and proliferate. But these prequel epidemics were happening in other seasons of the year. And it's possible that when these new microbes enter the population, if the weather conditions weren't right, they may have only killed a few people, but it wasn't warm enough for them to proliferate out of control. So they basically just laid low. But then all of a sudden, when summer came and that temperature went way up, all of a sudden these microbes that were laying low just exploded and started killing thousands of people.
So all the epidemics in London happened during the summertime?
The biggest ones did.
Does this have any bearing on cholera outbreaks where it's warm all around the year?
Well, that's what's tough. The reason this correlation seems to work is because of the seasonality of London. But in places like Bangladesh, where there aren't as many differences between seasons, or where there's other seasonal factors like heavy rains, like during the monsoons, that analysis hasn't been done. It's possible that could complicate the ability to predict a cholera epidemic in those places. But this really has applications beyond cholera, because there's a lot of other diseases that operate this way. And if researchers can find ways to identify the prequels of these big outbreaks, they may be able to better tackle the infection before it becomes an epidemic.
Okay. Well, thanks, Dave.
Thanks, Rob.
So what other stories are you looking into for the site?
Well, Rob, for Science Now, we've got a story about how mercury poisoning can change sexual preference in wildlife, and also a story about why spiders aren't more social. And for Science's policy blog, Science Insider, we're continuing to cover what impact the new U.S. Congress will have on science funding, and there's some new data we've got this week about just what kinds of things this new Congress could do that might affect everything from NIH funding to grant success rates and on down the line. And also a story about the controversial Japanese practice of research whaling. There are Japanese ships that go out and kill whales. The fishermen claim that they are killing the whales from research. A lot of environmental groups and conservation groups are opposed to this, and we've got a story about the latest battle on that. So be sure to check out all these stories on the site.
David Grimm is the online news editor of Science. You can check out the latest science news, plus all the stories on the science policy blog, Science Insider, at news.sciencemag.org.